Kia ora and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with the reforms proposed by the Health and Disability System Review Panel, also known as the Simpson Report. I speak to regular panellists and invited guests about those changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date and what we might expect. Kia ora and welcome to this episode of System Fix. It's the great reveal. On the 21st of April, Health Minister Andrew Little gathered many members of the health sector together at Parliament for breakfast and announced the eagerly awaited structure for the new health system. With Associate Minister Pene Hanare, Mr. Little broke the news that DHBs are for the chop. The Ministry of Health is for a shake-up and a new national health agency, Health NZ, will run a network of public hospitals and commission primary and community services, which will largely congregate in localities. A new public health agency is going to be based as a business unit in the Ministry of Health. The big news, aside from the ditching of DHBs, which is not in the spirit of the original Simpson report, was the elevation of the Māori Health Authority to a body able to commission services for Māori, but also to have a hand in co-commissioning with Health NZ in some power of veto, a definite strengthening of the role that had been recommended by the Simpson report. Well, that's it in a nutshell. Here with me are regular panellists, independent health researcher Gabrielle Baker and Auckland University health policy researcher Tim Tenbensel. Kia ora, Gabrielle and Tim.
Kia ora.
Okay, so guys, we've had about 36 hours to mull this over. I'm really interested in what your first gut reaction was and maybe what it settled down to in the last day. Gabrielle.
Well, firstly, I'm so impressed that you were able to summarise the full breadth of what was proposed in a relatively short intro. So well done, Barbara.
Thank you.
My gut reaction, I mean, it was an emotional reaction, actually, my first reaction, because to hear Māori Health be given such a prominent role in the new, in the announcements and in the decisions that weren't made by Cabinet was kind of a big deal. And so my first reaction was, oh my goodness, the stuff that I've been advocating for and that so many people have advocated for such a long time is happening. So that was my first reaction. But it's my job to have a critical eye. And so that has since kind of calmed down a bit. That was my first reaction.
And Tim, how about you?
Yeah, I'd say some similarities. I mean, it was more than I ever expected and seemed to be in a good direction. And, you know, I don't think we were alone in having that experience. I've talked to a number of people. So it was kind of, whoa, this was, it's pretty rare that a government will go further and bolder than a report, you know, that makes recommendations, and particularly with the sort of recommendations that were made in the final report of the Simpson Review. So quite strange territory. I've never been here before.
That's really interesting, isn't it, that our expectations were possibly a bit low?
Yeah, it's almost always the other way, isn't it? So, of course, yeah, like Gabrielle, there's the sort of the come down afterwards. And you're sort of thinking, okay, what could possibly go wrong? This, you know, I mean, the minister, it was interesting, acknowledged a hell of a lot of the implementation challenges in the speech, which, you know, I think it was also welcome. Had a chance to look through the cabinet paper, which is absolutely fascinating. And, you know, that's given a few more sort of clues as to the thinking is behind it. But I think there's just big questions about how it will all settle and which bits will actually get up and running first and where the momentum will be, because you can't do all this at once.
Yes, the cabinet paper is interesting in that it does spell out a lot of the detail of the thinking, which when you see how much thought's gone into it, it probably gives you a bit more of a sense of the commitment to the change. I think a lot of what Andrew Little talked about when he spoke at Parliament the other day, it did sound very aspirational. Part of me wondered that a lot of the kind of cynical reaction we got, this is what, 20 years on from the DHB, 30 years on from the last big national health reforms, people involved with those when they were 30 and 20 years younger, you know, I suppose there's enough people around to feel a bit cynical about how those reforms didn't really deliver. And that's possibly a really big hurdle in the sector. Although I think in my last podcast, someone commented that, well, you can always wait for everyone to retire, but it's possibly not the best solution. Gabrielle, one of the issues we've talked about in earlier episodes was the Māori Health Authority. What we've been given in this announcement must surely be a victory for Māori providers and for the Y2575 claimants.
Well, look, it has to be a victory for them. They're the ones who have got this on the agenda and got it to the point that now this idea of a Māori Health Authority seems like it might actually happen. And I mean, it was talked about in those reforms 30 years ago that you talk about too. You know, it's not the first time a Māori Health Authority has been raised, but this really seems like we've got an implementation plan for it, you know, and so it's a cause for celebration for them. I would say if you dig into the details, and of course that is my job, if you dig into the details a little, you'll see that it's not quite what the claimants and others have been talking about to date. And some of that stems from what's the role of Māori in the not just decision-making in the health system, which I think they've articulated, but in decision-making over the design of the authority and design of the health system overall. So it kind of seems to say that ministers are still going to be making most of the decisions over the Māori Health Authority. And that's not really what the claimants have been pushing most recently.
Because one of the points you've raised in the past is the need for this authority to be independent.
Yes.
I wondered if with what they've suggested, first of all, if they've done away with the idea of a 50-50 Crown Māori representation on the board of Health NZ, which was one of the Simpson proposals. But it seems what they've done instead is we've got the Māori Health Authority commissioning Kaupapa Māori services, but also co-commissioning with Health NZ the more general health services. Mm. And then with the iwi Māori partnership boards being involved with locality services as well. I mean, my first thought when I saw all that was I thinking, gosh, there's a great need for a lot of capacity here. But as you have previously said, what was desirable for a lot of Māori was to have that independent body separate from the government structures. Do you have any hope that this kind of the way this new board has authority has been so woven into this process might mitigate against that concern?
I think it's probably a catch-22 or some terrible cliche like that. On one hand, the proposals, especially in the cabinet paper, more so than those kind of lighter fact sheets, in the cabinet paper, the way that the Māori Health Authority would be woven into the business of Health New Zealand does look like the Māori Health Authority is going to have some teeth within the system.
They do raise the issue of the possibility of veto of decisions.
Yeah, so the ability to veto over specific things done by Health New Zealand. So it's kind of like the commissioning framework is one of the things they talk about as having a right of veto over. But the thing about independence seems to have been, and I won't say relegated because I don't think it's a hierarchy in that sense, but it has been shifted to a discussion about the iwi partnership boards being independent. So independent happens at that level. And the iwi partnership boards are described as partners, treaty partners to the Māori Health Authority, which is quite strange to me. If the Māori Health Authority is also supposed to be the partner within the system. So I think that on some level, that is a minute detail. It's half a sentence in a cabinet paper. But it says to me that this idea of independence and this idea of how Te Tiriti partnership happens within the health system hasn't been sorted in what's been agreed.
Thanks. The minister had given an indication that he would give more power to the Māori Health Authority than the Simpson report had recommended, but he hadn't given any indication that he was going to do away with the DHBs altogether. Was that a surprise?
Yes, on the whole. I mean, I always thought that the transition unit would sort of take the Simpson report and say, okay, right, but what is it that we want to do? And certainly there are certain indications in the Simpson report that were consistent with what's come out of the announcement yesterday. But I do think they did obviously had a fairly free interpretation of what they were going to do with it. I don't want to sort of make too much of that, but I think it was patently obvious in all the commentary that came out when the Simpson review was finally released that if you're going to set up Health New Zealand, why the hell do you need district health boards? I mean, so many people said it. So in that sense, it wasn't a surprise to do away with them completely. It's what many people had advocated for, I believe, and And therefore, you know, and there's a metaphor we use in policy studies about the policy soup, you know, the primeval policy soup and what ideas are kicking around and, you know, mutate and bump into each and recombine and all these sort of things. And, you know, this was a powerful idea that had been around. So in that sense, you know, we'd heard it before. Just what's the surprise is that they went so wholeheartedly.
I think we've said previously that the Simpson Report spent a lot of time pulling apart what was wrong with DHBs, and then the idea that it would then supersize them did never seem like the way to go at all.
No, I think that was the tone, and that was the sense that it wasn't a coherent document, and they didn't really have, for whatever reason, all the strands didn't sort of knit together neatly. That's often the case, but, you know, it was pretty obvious with that document.
There is a lot of commentary coming out that's kind of trying to compare these changes to the 90s reforms where we had the regional health authorities. But it's quite different this time because we aren't looking at a market model with competition between those regional offices or regional authorities. But there is still that regional nature, and then we're going to be looking at district nature. In your research, have you got any tips about how you go about balancing that central Health NZ office with all its district and regional divisions?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I've been thinking a lot about that. Well, first, I just want to sort of go back to the irony, the supreme irony yesterday. On the surface, it looks like Labor's introducing something that resembles closely what National did in the 90s, and National is taking the line that Labor did in opposition. I know you can dig much deeper and, you know, find the differences, and there are plenty of those as well, but fundamentally, that is true. On the question of centralisation particularly, that is absolutely true. So that means there's some lessons from that period that must be sort of taken into account. And you get a sense that they are there, and people have been thinking about that in the cabinet document. So particularly the idea that, you know, with the centralised and regionalised structure, that decision-making will be remote from communities, which was the big criticism around 2000. So the locality boards or whatever these entities are going to be the sort of the thing that addresses that aspect of it. So it's not clear to me how far up or down the scale in terms of centralisation or decentralisation, the power will really end up. Of course, we will just have to wait and see. But my sense is that it will be the regions when it comes to hospitals. When it comes to primary and community services, I guess the hope is that it still is local and genuinely local in one sense. But, you know, I just don't know how much autonomy these bodies will, A, have, and B, want in some cases.
Yes, it's actually worth just remembering that, yeah, Health NZ is going to be running the network of hospitals as well as commissioning primary and community care services. Gabrielle, you've also got a strong interest in disability issues. And a couple of episodes back, I interviewed a couple of people with regard to what was happening in disability. And ultimately, they said to me their hope was that it would be forgotten rather than be messed around with. And here we have disability is going to be delayed until September. Have you got any insights or thoughts about what that might mean for those outcomes in September?
Well, my main thought on it is that I was really pleased that they recognised that more work needed to be done on disability. In the cabinet, the kind of discussion seems to be about more work needing to be done about the governance over the model of disability. From what I read into that, it's that understanding of disability support shouldn't be seen only as a health issue, that disability support is a kind of a whole of government issue. And how do we get that right within the context of the health and disability system review? So I thought that was good. And linking it to the Enabling Good Lives work, which was part of that podcast that you had on a few weeks back now, giving that prominence seems to make sense too. So that looks good to me. The question I will always have is, are the right people being involved in that in the right way? On the face of it, that looks really positive to me.
That's actually a point that's been raised by a few commentators in the last day or so, and that is getting new people into these organisations and at the top of these organisations. I noticed that on the time frame, it talks about the DHB staff will continue on the same terms and conditions, which will be transferred over to Health NZ as of 1st of July next year, which seems like quite a major commitment for the new organisation to start with, actually inheriting all the staff from the DHBs. And I can understand from a point of view of workforce stability, why they are going down that track. But one of the aims of the review was to improve the financial sustainability of the sector. Tim, have you got any thoughts about that decision to just wholeheartedly shift everyone over to the new system? Or maybe I've missed something in the papers that's not quite...
I had that impression as well. I would suspect it's not to sort of get offside with the key unions and not to invite a battle there straight off. But of course, you would think that the workforce needed in Health New Zealand is going to be somewhat different in the balance of roles, less sort of, you know, low-level administrative roles, for example, and more sophisticated data analysis skills when you're, say, dealing with information. So, you know, that would be one example. So there's going to have to be some significant change in the composition of the workforce, and certainly in the non-clinical roles, for this vision to be realised.
Yes, it certainly makes sense if you're talking about transferring clinical staff in your hospitals over from the 1st of July, but it did seem a quite a bold statement to make with regard to the rest of the DHB staff. The announcement also reiterated the plan for a national health plan and a health charter, so those are still on board. The minister was clear that he wasn't making any decisions or announcements about funding, and when I went through the cabinet paper, I did notice that the section on deficits had been redacted on what the government was going to do with the DHB deficits. That also creates a difficult starting point for Health NZ and also potentially for the Māori Health Authority, because whatever money there is in the system is going to be spread out among these new bodies.
So, Barbara, I did see somewhere that there was an acknowledgement that some significant new investment would be necessary. I just can't track it down at the moment. Somewhere in the cabinet paper. May not have been those words, but there's some acknowledgement there is a cost to doing this change. And that taken into account, the budget might reveal something.
It might do. And it's not that far away. In fact, what is it? I think it's the 20th of May. Pacific people, another area where the recommendation is the Ministry of Health work on a new strategy for Pacific health. I suppose from the Pacific point of view, they may feel left out. But in fact, the aim again of the Health and Disability Services Review was to improve outcomes for Pacifica as well. Any thoughts on that?
It's interesting that this gets discussed in the cabinet paper in the same sort of section as talking about localities. That raises some interesting issues, particularly if you're looking at South Auckland, for example, or Porirua, as to sort of how the approach suggested might work. And it might be the approach is to have overlapping localities and ethnicity defined service networks, local service networks, which I guess it sort of raises for me the thing about the localities is what do you do in larger urban areas where people receive care is not where they live? And I think that issue would be very pertinent to Pacifica people as well as anybody else, basically.
The other issue was the size of the localities, and I've heard figures ranging from 20,000 to 100,000. Have you seen any figures giving an indication of the size of localities?
I haven't, but got the sense that this would be something that would be worked out within the regions. It'll start off where the DHB offices are, basically, and then may devolve further from that or may not.
Another aspect which kind of caught my eye was that with those localities, there is going to be drawn up a list of core services which each locality will need to provide to its local community. So core community and primary care services. Now, we've had the core services debate many years back with the national reforms where we were trying to look at a national set of core services across health. Gabrielle, have you had any thoughts about how easy or difficult it might be to actually create that core service? Set of services?
It's not a question I thought a lot about, to be honest. Just on the issue of localities first, I'd say that the closest hint I could get in the paper about what a locality was, and of course I'm looking at it through my lens, is that they talk about the 20 iwi partnership boards being localities. And so that says to me it's the current DHB boundaries, which is interesting because iwi wouldn't necessarily agree the current DHB boundaries are the right ones from a kind of an iwi connection point of view.
Yeah, there was mention of the fact they wanted to work with iwi Māori partnership boards are included in the diagram, but there are, as you say, only 20 because it aligns with the current DHBs, but they also mentioned that even within those 20, the level of engagement with the board varies quite a lot.
Considerably.
Yeah. So I would have assumed that they will need to be forming more partnerships in that area
I would have thought so too. It was just that, yeah, the way it's described, I would thought they'd need to develop more and to absolutely, they talk about evolution in the media statements. It was all been about evolution of those partnership boards. And I truly feel like that's an understatement. I think that it's more like that's the seed of an idea, but they're going to have to be fundamentally different.
There's huge, huge work to be done in that area, isn't there? Because we're also looking at getting communities involved with creating the locality plans,
yeah.
You know, just what the commissioning is going to be based on.
Yeah, and I don't know what other of you think, but there's this sort of, the pendulum has swung a long way from the sort of the clean, crisp split between purchaser and provider. We still have the language of commissioning, but if you look at some of this stuff around the localities, you've got potentially the same group planning the services as involving the same players that are delivering them. And there's a whole sort of philosophy of public management called new public governance that sort of celebrates that idea that the people, the implementers, should be the creators. And I go along with that to a large degree, but there are also some significant risks in it as well, because any sort of networking activity inevitably results in some sort of exclusion. Some players, some providers will be excluded. And, you know, partly that's about manageability, partly that may be about politics. And, you know, a classical economist might sort of come in here and say, well, you know, you're going to get all sort of cartels or conflicts of interest or a whole lot of all that sort of stuff going on. And I think that language, I think, is not really relevant, but the idea still needs to be considered in terms of what are the risks and what are the potential downsides, even though it's something I generally support.
So my last question before I move on to the system fix quiz is, what advice have you got for the health minister as he starts working with his cabinet colleagues and the other backbench MPs to really explain this vision?
That's a big question. Well, I mean, that it's a sort of thing depends on somebody's persuasive and persuasive abilities, which, you know, he has certainly done quite well historically in that area. Also, I think he has a fair bit of respect around the cabinet table. He certainly has up until now. So there will be a certain amount of goodwill mixed with, geez, what have you got yourself into here?
Well, we've already heard from the opposition, you know, the cause of, you know, separatism. That is going to be a significant hurdle. I mean, he's made the commitment, but that will be a hurdle, I suppose, with regard to community as well. Gabrielle, do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think that really will be a hurdle, but when I look through the cabinet paper, I don't see a separate system. I can see why somebody who wanted to discredit it as a separate system could say that, but what I see is a description of a system that has a Māori player woven into it. So, you know, we're still talking about services from the same hospitals. We're still talking about services from the same providers at the point of entry into the health system. So it's not, to me, a separate system. And so I guess communicating that clearly is probably important.
Yeah, I agree. That's a challenge. You know, how can you characterize it as separate when it's so intertwined? There may be separate services. That's something that was actually actively fostered and facilitated by the National Party when it was in government in the 1990s. So I understand that it might be a sort of an easy rhetorical button to push, but it hopefully won't be too difficult to counter either.
Yeah, a bit of history, a few history lessons could go a long way. So by and large, we are all feeling optimistic.
Yeah.
Cautiously so.
Good on you, Gabrielle. It was quite refreshing to get more than you'd expected, but then you have to sit back and think, my gosh, there's a lot of work. And we know even in the next few weeks, we're going to get the interim appointments to those boards, and that will give us some kind of indications of how far they're going to go with regard to bringing new blood into the system. But then just bedding in these aspirations is a huge, huge job. And we can talk more about this, I'm sure, as we get our heads around it as well. But now we go on to the System of Fix quiz. Three questions.
Oh, no, I'm going to make sure I read that cabinet paper.
I'm going to fail, I know.
No, that's easy questions. But before that, pick your buzzer.
Gabrielle?
Yeah, me.
Okay, first question. Our health and disability system, which is the name of the white paper, was how many pages long? Tim?
About 12.
Well done. Yes, it was 11 pages long. Well done. Okay, a little bit tricky this one. Do you know what a population health and wellbeing network is?
No.
This is the kind of name that puts fear into the hearts of newspaper editors, because you think every time they mention that, it's going to take up five words. That is the name that is given in the paperwork to the district office of the regional division of Health NZ, the Population Health and Wellbeing Network, which is kind of a confusing name because a network to me sounds less like an office and more like a large grouping of organisations, but maybe that one will change. Okay, the last question, and you may have been in amongst them as well, was how many views has Andrew Little's Facebook live stream had to date? That was the live stream of the breakfast.
Not me, but...
Definitely me. But I think there were hundreds at the point I looked, so...
Can I guess, Jelly Beans? Yeah. My guess would be, I don't know, 15,000.
No, I'm going to go for 2,000.
Yeah, it's probably an estimate now.
He's underestimating his pulling power. 35,000 people have watched that live stream recording, either when it was live streamed or subsequently.
I'm impressed, actually, by those numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, well, that's probably enough for our listeners this episode while we all start to digest these changes. It's pretty exciting because this is actually what this podcast has been about. Up until now, we've been pondering and speculating, and now we can get into the nitty-gritty work of pulling it all apart in a nice way, of course. So thank you, guys.
In a constructive way.
Thank you, and until next time, kia ora. Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you are interested in learning more about changes to the health system, you can subscribe to New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa by going to nzdoctor.co.nz, and you can subscribe to Pharmacy Today by going to pharmacytoday.co.nz. The Health Media also publishes a free fortnightly newsletter about people moving around the health system, the Roster Te Rārangi.